I'm talking about Tony Harrison's The Labourers of Heracles, which is quite a recent play by Tony Harrison, the Leeds Classics alumnus, who's celebrating his 80th year this year. A few facts about the play itself there, including its sponsorship by the Heracles General Cement Company of Greece, and the silo featuring the Heracles logo is actually part of the set, and I'll show you another picture of that later. It was commissioned for the European Cultural Centre at Delphi, and it was written and produced around the same time as Harrison is preparing to go to Bosnia for the Guardian newspaper to document and write poetry about the conflict going on there. So this is clearly in his mind very much at the same time as thinking about themes of war and violence that come out of the Heracles myth that he chose to write about. So what I'm talking about in this paper mainly is more of a show and tell session at the moment. I'm in very early stages of looking through his archive, which we have in the Brotherson Library here. So we have unpublished notebooks, hundreds of unpublished items by Tony Harrison with his notes made during his compositions. And this is just a first extract from that. An early idea, the labourers of Heracles, early on in one of the first notebooks, underlining labourers in his almost impossible to decipher in places handwriting. And he has this picture of Heracles, and he writes cement worker leaning on a shovel in this pose, and this is part of his kind of early thinking, along with the Heracles Cement Company and so on, and the blending of these ideas and turning it into one of his favourite themes, which is about class and classics, the accessibility of the meaning, the value of classical drama to everyday people who haven't had the privilege of classical education. So his main characters are labourers who are building the theatre. The Greek agreed to basically make this theatre for him, a half-built theatre, specifically for the staging of this play, so that the labourers are there on set being the real workmen who are making the theatre space, and then they take on the voice of Heracles and others. So he has this idea of the concrete shoes, the kind of mafiosi idea of concrete being involved in violence, killing people as well. This is an extract from the published plays, and he has this scene where all the labourers become stuck in the concrete, in the cement of the theatre that they're building, and in order to get free from it, they have to recite the fragments of the tragic poet Phrynichus, whose voice comes to them out of the silo. So a little bit more about the archive that I'm working with. This is part of a kind of larger research and teaching related project that I'm starting to work on using the archives. So I'm going to start using Harrison's translation of the Oresteia, which was commissioned for the National Theatre in a module on classical receptions for second and third year undergrads this coming academic year, and a session using the archive material so that they can incorporate that as well as published material into their research. So the Labourers has two notebooks, over 450 pages. He's pasted in Tragicorum Graecorum Fragmenta and two different editions of the Greek fragments of Phrynichus, and then written his, leaving facing pages blank for his own notes, and he scribbles in different translations, different Greek words within the fragments. He also has pasted in a translation of the relevant parts of Herodotus 6. Labels and pictures of Heracles branded products from around Greece, including Heracles wine that he was drinking in Greece while he was there. He's got his boarding pass for the trip to Greece in March that led up to this performance in August, and he was there working on it for the whole time. He's very much like a magpie, but also a scholar. He seizes on anything that has anything to do with what he's currently thinking about. So there are all these kind of newspaper cuttings on the Bosnian War, in-depth reports from broadsheets and kind of tabloid things, as I'll show you later, lots of images from that, and he's clearly building that into what he's thinking about themes of war and violence. Also lots about the history of cement and concrete and the technology and how it works. He really kind of, whatever theme he's getting into, he really researches it and gets encyclopedia entries and academic articles and in whole and pastes them into the notebooks and writes stuff around them. So it's a very rich resource for seeing the process of how this comes about. So this is something that doesn't make it into the published play, but some early thoughts. He has scrawled handwritten draft and then typed up draft as well. So here's an early type up draft of an opening or a summary. Five labourers are laying the foundations for the theatre of the 21st century. As they prepare to lay the concrete orchestra, they're haunted by the fragments of Phrynichus. The spirit of Heracles wrestles against everything that makes marbles into mortar and fertilizer, and texts into rubbish. Against oblivion, he's inserted war in handwriting, oblivion, neglect, the destruction of cities, and the banning of plays like The Fall of Miletus by Phrynichus. Not only was the great city of Miletus and its male inhabitants destroyed by the Persians, Phrynichus' play about the destruction was banned from ever being performed again. That's what we get from Herodotus about Phrynichus' Fall of Miletus. And paradoxically, one of the most destructive forces Heracles must wrestle against is Heracles himself. So he gets early onto this idea of Heracles as an ambiguous symbol, his role as, of course, a very violent death-dealing, but also as wrestling against death and champion for humanity against death. Another key theme that he keeps coming back to is this story, doesn't really matter about the truth of it, but the tradition that Phrynichus is the first tragic playwright to put female masks on male actors. So did Phrynichus need to create this first female mask to mourn male destruction? How did the first men learn to incorporate the female lament into their souls when they wore the first masks of women introduced into drama by Phrynichus? So that's one of the things that he keeps on coming back to as well. This is part of an early type draft that doesn't make it into the play, apart from the fragment of Phrynichus itself. I foolishly called the paper Strategies of Translation, not realizing that in this play, unlike many others, he doesn't actually translate any of the Greek source texts. He keeps them all in the original Greek. So he has these labourers recite the ancient Greek, but he does have translations in other senses, as I'll come on to. So he has this fragment, the only fragment surviving from Phrynichus' Heracles tetralogy, taken to refer to the wrestling match between Heracles and Death. Death has already consumed the entire tetralogy, but for these four surviving words. So one of the themes that he comes back to, again, is this idea of the death or the survival of the texts and the artifacts. And also with this play with the cement, he has the idea that there are fragments of sculpture as well as fragments of text, and they get turned into concrete. They get ancient statues or fragments of them get used in modern cement and transformed into something else. So these are the translations. There aren't actually any translations in this play of the Phrynichus fragments. But there are translations of ancient fragments of both marble and text into a new context and made to construct new art. So destruction into construction, and clearly, very literally, construction in the construction site, which is the theatre. He also plays on this phrase, the theatre of war, and the theatre. Another translation that he's always negotiating, something that he comes back to in many of his works as well as this, is this translation of the male and female language or voice into one another, or voicing of it by the other. Also then, he's very self-conscious in all of his work about the role of the poet in society, the power of poetry, what it can do, or sometimes pessimistically how little it can actually do. So war and suffering being transformed into art, is that redemptive? Does that intervene in any way, serve any purpose beyond just talking about it? So one thing that doesn't make it into the play, just a little note in the notebook, is art mere retrospective aid, in inverted commas, words into concrete action? So you can see that he's trying to strive for something more than just commenting from the sidelines. And then finally, this theme of class that I mentioned as well, high and low culture transforming into one another. So the labourers and their language, we saw some colourful language in the first quote from the published play there. The labourers speak very much as ordinary workmen on a building site, as it were, with lots of swearing and talking about how they're not interested in and have no understanding of the kind of art that's going to be put on in this theatre that they're building. But then they end up reciting the fragments of Phrynichus because they're haunted by the voice of the playwright come to inspire them. So fragments, we have the ancient marbles and the ancient texts destroyed but then recycled. It's not in this play, unlike many of Harrison's classical plays, a case of a translation because there is nothing to translate. As it were, there are fewer than 20 fragments of Phrynichus surviving, and all from different plays, of course. But they're used as a building block for a new play, just as the broken down statues are chucked into the mix to become cement for the new theatre. He seizes on this tradition of Heracles wrestling with death as one of his kind of central reasons for using him, and then the ambiguity of Heracles. This also ties in with the male and female voice theme that he uses a lot in this play. Heracles' violence is bound up with his masculinity and his monstrous acts, but he's also, of course, a saviour of humans from monsters and a conqueror of death. So he types up bits from academic books, so he's got G.S. Kirk's The Nature of Greek Myths here, ancient tradition that one of Heracles' chief functions was to come into conflict with death, and then more from Kirk's book later about the particular qualities of Heracles and the ambiguous nature of it. Phrynichus' first use of female mask in tragedy, Lamento, Lament, War. And then the fall of Miletus as the fall of Srebrenica in the Bosnian conflict is something that pervades the whole of the two notebooks. So it's the juxtaposition of all of these things that he's currently juggling and thinking about during the creative process for writing this play, and everything that he's reading and preparing to go there as well as a war poet. But also, as we'll see, it's not just a juxtaposition that comes out of his own head, or not completely that, it's actually finding language that's used to talk about these conflicts in similar ways. So he keeps on talking about the Medizing appeasers, so the appeasers about the fall of Miletus, with what in the press at the time is a charge labelled against the British, against others in the UN, as appeasing the perpetrators of genocide and not doing anything about the ethnic cleansing in the Bosnian War. This is a very nice bit from the notebooks. The text there is just what he's written next to it. The power of the fragment, when properly placed, the whole horse fills the spaces. So he's thinking about using fragments and creating something else, and how you can see the whole form even when you don't have much, even when you only have a few fragments. This, of course, is not exactly what he does in this play, though. If you think about those fragments of the horse statue being placed, they're placed where they should be if you are to see the whole horse, but he doesn't place the fragments of Phrynichus in the context of a long play doing the same story that fragment of Phrynichus comes from, which would be the equivalent thing. So they become rather a composite, and the kind of metaphor of composite from construction, from building material. It becomes a composite of a larger, completely new structure, like the ancient marbles as cement. But they are, of course, placed in the modern theatre, in its geographic space, and in its modern context. And there are many ways in which, throughout the play, he kind of draws these parallels. But the fragments themselves are just here. As I said, the labourers are made or inspired to recite the surviving fragments of Phrynichus. So the voice from the silo says, "Do holotadramata to Phrynichu," and in turn, the labourers just recite them in Greek, starting off with the one from the Heracles tetralogy. So they are doing this to kind of release themselves. They're stuck in the cement and they think they have to please or appease the spirit of the playwright by reciting his work in order to get free. But the spirit of Phrynichus, who was played by Tony Harrison, he came out on stage to recite this speech as the spirit of Phrynichus. He says, "You'll be staying stuck until you do more than the title of Halosis Miletu." And he keeps on throughout the notebooks and in the play itself this idea of the title without a play. It's a lot about absence as well as about fragments. So to honour Phrynichus, who gave theatre a start in redeeming destruction through the power of art, and witnessing male warfare gave the task of mourning and redemption to the female mask, to honour him, all modern actors need to celebrate his genius and get their spirits freed from Europe's impasse, where art cannot redeem the cry from Kajina or the Srebrenica scream. All modern poets and actors need to do is perform the sadly missing Halosis Miletu, is to incline their heads northwest a few degrees, i.e. towards the former Yugoslavia. So that's one of the ways in which the space and the proximity is made very clear to the modern context where the fragments are being put, to see the moral madness of modern Heracles. More from the notebook, some of these suggestive juxtapositions. We have Chirac, I've cut off his C, sorry. Jacques Chirac blames the appeasers, and then we have French President Jacques Chirac angered Britain and other allies by accusing them of acting like Hitler's appeasers. The worst performance since the appeasement of Hitler, US Speaker Newt Gingrich on the Western response to the fall of Srebrenica. And then from Lazenby's The Defense of Greece, he's got this idea of appeasement of the Athenians, of some people within Athenian society being willing to appease those who caused the fall of Miletus and destroyed all of the male population there. So he's drawing these comparisons, but also kind of finding juxtapositions in the language used about them in scholarship, in documentary journalism. So here's another juxtaposition where essentially he just takes the big word Srebrenica from a newspaper headline and puts it next to Miletu, Halosis, to equate the two again. He has loads and loads of images and also stories from the newspapers at the time of ethnic cleansing and so on, the fall of Srebrenica, pictures of the concentration camps that were used to put the men in from there, and all the lines of women and children fleeing. So this comes into the play in Heracles' opening speech about appeasement. Appeasement of aggressors has been the fatal cause not just of the Persian but your more recent wars. So Heracles addresses the audience as you and talks about your wars that you're having now. Medizing appeasers banned the fall of Miletus and fined for his politics the poet Phrynichus. Though I applaud he wrote Milesian scenes, I'm not keen on the means he used to do it. So he also dwells on this cross-dressing aspect, as this Heracles calls it. Phrynichus the first to bring on wailing women, but what to me's the worst, it wasn't women sang the roles, but dragged up men. Greek drama was never the same again. And in this play, there are no female actors. The labourers put on female masks with headscarves around them to perform the female lament. I said there were some tabloids as well. So we have the Daily Mail, and this is the kind of thing that makes Brexit probably more popular on the other side of the channel than here, talking about the ethnic cleansing and what's going on. A horror, a short holiday flight from Britain yesterday. So, of course, it's emphasising the proximity to us and bringing it home. How can we be letting this happen so close to us? But this is now the second time the direction and the proximity of the modern spectator in the Delphi Theatre, how close they are to the conflict that's going on, the geographical space and its relation to what's going on, as well as the relation of the content to what's going on, is repeatedly emphasised. The mourning women trudge the roads of murderous Europe. The pictures we've seen and many of the others that he's got from the newspapers of lines of women fleeing the Bosnian conflict are clearly in his mind when he has that. He also has an article comparing this genocide and ethnic cleansing with that by the Turks in the same region and those in World War II in the same region. This article doesn't mention the one that he's talking about in the ancient world, but you can see that he's playing on the same idea of the history repeating itself from the one that he's talking about through all of these in the same way, and of course emphasising the Turk as the modern equivalent of the Persians. This is another picture from the performance. So you have labourers 2 and 3 who put on female masks. They're just really blank theatrical masks, but with the headscarves, and they perform the female voices. In the background, you can see the concrete mixers, which are an integral part of the set, and labourer 1, played by Barry Rutter of Northern Broadsides, who's done a lot of Harrison's work. He performed the Heracles role as well as labourer 1. We have here an excerpt from these female chorus members performing this, and it specifically says in the stage directions that they take on female voices, so they're to imitate the voice, they're to alter their voice to perform this part to reflect that theme that he's talking about. So this was the truth that Phrynichus first knew when female masks first mourned Halosis Miletu. But he has the labourers lament not just their own war in their time, but of course the wars and the sufferings of both sides, and those that history replaying itself, of course the conflicts, it's different sides who are the ones who are cleansed and who are suffering at different times. He's very alive to the reversals there as well as the continuity. Just to emphasise the complete random association, it's just the final slide to leave there for questions, but anything to do with concrete as well as anything to do with Greek tragedy or Bosnia is in there. So on a lighter note, that's a lovely front page of The Sun about a concrete mixer that has nothing to do with what he's working on. It has some lovely puns in it, 3-speed machines and so on going on. But I don't really have any conclusion. I'm in the early stages of a kind of show and tell going through the archive. So this is just the kind of treasures from the archive. Okay, thank you.